Danny, Dave, and more. Streaming on every device on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
It is Danny, Dave, and more, and it's very exciting, not just because we're talking to a fourth-round pick from the Seattle Seahawks, Will Dissly, but someone who is a product of the greatest university on the entire planet Earth.
Amen.
The University of Washington. Go Dogs. What's up, Will?
How's it going? It's good to be with you guys. You know, have fun.
It's exciting to talk to you and to see kind of how things are started. I know a lot of people had to be really pumped up. I loved the call when John Schneider informed you you're going to be the draft pick.
Yeah.
And you expressed disbelief that it might possibly, that was it really Schneider on the other end of the line?
Yeah, that was a fun day. I mean, kind of caught me off guard. I didn't really know how fast it was going to go. And, you know, he called me, he goes, we're going to take you here. And I was just like, it's like so early. What's going on?
Did you not know where you were going to go?
I mean, I had some assumptions. I always tell people I didn't really have any expectations going in, but like the first round is so long, and even the second and third rounds are longer days, and then, you know, that last day just goes really, really quick. Everyone knows who they want, so it goes fast. So, you know, it kind of just came up quick, and we were just really excited.
Did your agent give you like a range of where you're going to be drafted probably?
Yeah, he did a good job, you know, of managing expectations. You know, we had some high hopes, and you know, kind of the way the picks fell and the teams that wanted me, and just really thankful for where we ended up.
So tell us about what Pete Carroll was talking about you and how you can be that classic tight end. Do you remember watching Zach Miller at all? Tight end.
I actually have watched quite a bit of his tape, so yeah, I've watched a little bit of his film, and that's a great compliment. He's a really good player.
Yeah, so they kind of want to get back to that, and you sort of fit that. But tell us about this offense and what you think your role is going to be in it.
Yeah, this is a great offense, you know, and it's led by Russell. You know, he's a veteran, he's experienced, and he has a lot to offer at that quarterback position. And then, you know, we're doing some cool things up front, you know, and that's with Justin Britt. It's the leadership, Dwayne Brown, it's the leadership. And then, you know, at skill position, you know, every guy just has his day. You know, there's a lot of new guys, a lot of veterans that are showing up. But, you know, we're just trying to be physical, we're trying to be explosive, and, you know, hopefully we can help this team win.
Hey, Will, since he started this interview with that BS about Washington, I'm a Coug, I'm a WSU guy, and so I'm thinking
you're supposed to say, I'm sorry.
No.
Yeah,
so, I mean, he got it wrong because we all know it's the Go Cougs. That's the place to be. But you're a small town guy from Bozeman. Don't you think you would have enjoyed playing in Pullman more than in Seattle?
Ah, man. No. I'm a dog for life, bro.
Really? Are you sure?
Absolutely. I did room with Cole Madison when I was training. I have no qualms with that guy. He's a great guy. And, you know, I guess I've grown on the Cougs, but, you know, forever a dog. And, you know, when that day rolls around, you know what colors I'll be wearing.
Will's probably very much like me in that when the Cougs aren't playing the Huskies, I kind of root for the Cougs. Like, I want the Cougs to succeed a
yeah,
little bit.
Yeah, well, you and Will have something in common where you both don't know the words to your fight song either, I bet.
I bet you I do.
Do you know the words?
Absolutely.
All right, go.
Bow down to Washington. Bow down to Washington.
Dun, 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 dun.
Mighty are the men who wear the purple and the gold.
Joyfully we welcome them within the victor's fold.
We will carve your names in the Hall of Fame, hey, to preserve the memory of our devotion. So heaven help the foes of Washington. They're trembling at the feet of mighty Washington. Our boys are there with bells. Our fighting blood excels. It's harder to push them over the line than past the Dardanelles. The victory, the cry of Washington. Let their lungs together with a rah, rah, rah. And o'er the land, our loyal band will sing the glory of Washington forever. Hey, you know how he knows every time we play that song.
Yeah. No, I grew up being... You're a good sport, by the way. I maybe could start to like you for some reason.
Hopefully the vocals weren't too bad.
No,
it was fantastic.
Right? No, how come you guys... Well, I grew up being a Husky fan, and then I went to WSU and saw the light, but... How come you guys always have so much success against the Cougs? I went to the game this year.
Why is water wet?
Man,
why is the sky blue?
I pre-functioned. I was so fired up. I saw the game against Utah the week before, and Utah almost got you guys. And I thought, man, Washington's vulnerable this year, and look what happened.
It's a great day, you know. A lot of excitement, a lot of energy, you know. Got to come out.
There's only one disappointment that I have is that I wasn't at that game because it was the weekend the Seahawks were playing at the 49ers, so I was down in San Francisco. But I loved the idea that when do you think he left? A proud Cougar fan, at what point do you think he left the game?
And it was raining, too, so I feel like he was just like, he sat there the whole time.
No, he did not. He bailed in the third quarter. But here's the best part is because he gets out to his car and his car's boxed in. So he got to his car and he got to sit in the car. And here's the blessing is they got to listen to the final quarter and a half of Bob Rondo calling Huskies blowout of the Cougs. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, you guys have our number. You do. That's for sure.
What's nice is now I'm on the Hawks. I can brag all about the dogs, and Coach Peterson can't say anything about it. So that's great.
That's very true. You don't get muted here. Tell me about the transition that you made, though, because guys, it's not uncommon for guys to switch positions in college. Mm-hmm. It's less common for it to be a defensive lineman going to tight end. Did they have to sell you on the idea of making that switch?
Well, I played both ways in high school, and if you've heard the story before, it's kind of funny. My roommate, Drew Sample, who's still playing there at tight end, I kind of told him, I was like, hey, maybe, you know, they'll get a package and we can play together. And he was like, I don't think so, you know, hot shot freshman. So it's kind of funny how it worked out. And I was just looking to get on the field and help the Dogs win. And whether it was on the defense side or the offense side, I just wanted to play. So it worked out.
What kind of athlete were you in high school, Will? What other sports did you play?
Oh, shoot. I guess freshman year I played baseball and then switched to track and did basketball and obviously football. And previously before that was hockey. So I pretty much tried to do everything I could.
Do you pride yourself on your hands? Because I remember listening to Schneider after they worked you out over there, and he said you could barely hear the ball hit your hands because you have soft hands.
Yeah, it's a pretty easy game. It's you throw it to you, you better catch it, and then go do something cool with it. So I don't know.
Sounds pretty simple.
Yeah.
You played hockey.
Yep.
You must have been hell on skates.
Well, I had two older brothers, Nick, who played basketball for Montana State, and Russ played for Salem State out in Massachusetts. He played hockey out there, so Nick played basketball. So I just tried to be just like them, so I played every sport I could and then found my love in football.
Listening to all the different sports you played, there's a big topic of specialization and mm-hmm. kids that specialize in one sport early on. Do you think playing multiple sports has helped you?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I get that coaches want them to be together and lift together and, you know, have their one sport. But, you know, when you play different sports, you're competitive. You're competing year round. You're working different muscles. You're working on different cardio. And it teaches you coordination. So I'm a big fan of it. I don't know necessarily that it helped me get to where I am today, but I definitely encourage kids to play different sports, different roles, and just always compete. So.
Plus, he's a golfer.
Really?
I try.
Well, I saw that you took some lessons at Golf Tech.
Yeah, that was cool. Got set up. Again, my brothers are big golfers, so just trying to be like them, and got some new sticks and hit the course. It was, you know, it was awesome.
Are you better driver or are you better on the greens?
You know, it depends on the day. But I guess I'm better close up. Working on the driver, I think I could be a big hitter. So, I don't know, it just takes reps.
I got to ask, and this is going to be more of a theoretical question. Mm-hmm. If you're on the tee and maybe your driver's been a little erratic, is it ever acceptable to hit a 3-wood off the tee?
No.
All right, Will.
Come on.
Attaboy.
He hits 3-woods off the tee, Dave, over here.
Unless you're in the majors, there's no point in laying up. Let's go for it.
Yeah. Isn't the point of the game to win, though?
The point is to win.
Okay, so I beat him by a stroke, and that's why I'm using my 3-wood.
Okay.
Is that okay? Now is it okay?
He's a Husky that I like. He is.
That's not uncommon. You've liked a lot of Huskies. You like Jermaine
Jake
Curse.
Jake Locker, Joe Jarzynka, and the list.
Jermaine Curse?
I didn't really like
Yes,
Curse.
You did.
No, I didn't.
Oh, my goodness.
But I love Jarzynka.
Yeah.
And Jake Locker. Will Disley.
Are you a guy that knows, like, Washington football history? Kind of look into
Probably not as good as I should, but yeah. There's a lot of greats out there.
When I was in eighth grade, remember Joe Steele?
Mm-hmm.
Joe Steele was like the man. You ever heard of him?
I haven't heard that.
He's number 24, and I saw him like about 8 years ago, mm-hmm. and I went up to him like a little fanboy. I was like, are you Joe Steele? Wow. And he was kind of embarrassed by it. But it seems like a lot of kids, you know, the guys your age now, some like get into the history, but mm-hmm. a lot of guys are like anybody that was before the internet was invented, they don't know anything about
it. Yeah, it's tough, but –
you know, the cool thing about Washington is there's so much history. And, you know, we've had some former players come back, Michael Jackson and some of those greats on that 91 team come back and talk to us. So I guess I am a fan of that. It's really cool to hear their stories and hear, because, you know, it's Washington. They built that and they built that program. And, you know, we're just continuing their legacy. So it was cool to meet them. And although I don't know all the greats and all the great stories, you know, I definitely appreciate it.
Chris Peterson, what an awesome guy. I've only talked to him like a couple of times, but I just get the feeling that, like, the Washington program is going to be really good just because of the kind of guys, the quality of guys he brings in.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, and I think the first thing is that he cares, and that staff really cares about their players. You know, obviously we all love to win, and his whole thing is about competing, but you know, he really cares about his players. He wants you to be successful. He wants you to have a life outside of football. He wants you to be the best version of you, not only on the field, but off the field as well. So it's a really cool program in the way that it's set up.
Well, what's being from Montana mean to you?
It's all about, you know, being proud of where you come from. Montana people are hardworking and they're humble, and so I just try and represent that every day I can. You know, when you leave the state, there's not a lot of Montanans running around there because we don't like to leave very much. It's a great place. So, you know, when they find out that you're from Montana, you kind of hold yourself to a higher standard, and you want to, you know, be that version that when people think of Montana, okay, oh, that's a stand-up guy. He's humble. He works hard. So that's kind of what I try to be.
Were your parents born out there? How did they end up in Montana?
Yeah, so, you know, they kind of bounced all over. My mom was from Cascade, small town in Cascade, Montana, right outside Great Falls, and my dad grew up in Lewistown, right in the heart of Montana, and they grew up there, and they went to Wyoming for a little bit and started their family and then came back to Bozeman, and then they've been there ever since. So
Montana's pretty beautiful.
Cool. Yeah, Montana's a great place. I have some high school friends that retired there. And you were a ball boy when Brock Coyle was on the team at Bozeman High School.
Yep, so my dad reffed. I was, I don't even know how old I was, but, you know, I was out there helping my dad ref. I think he gave me $5 for helping him out. And so, you know, I was out there on BHS sideline, and there's Brock Coyle and all those guys. And I just, you know, when you're that little, pretty much everyone that is playing varsity football is your idol. So then, you know, wrote down the line, he's playing for the Seahawks, and I get to meet him. And I go, hey, I'm going through this process. Can you help me out? And he was great. And got to train with him before the season, so it's been awesome to work with him.
You know, the other thing I read in that story, it was a great story. I can't even remember where it was from, but it was on the internet. You had a coach there, a position coach, who's now the head coach at Bozeman High.
Yeah, Levi Weshey.
Levi Weshey?
Weshey, yep.
And he said that you're a goofball, that you always kept things light. And the one thing I was worried about for this interview is that the coach said that if you ever said anything kind of dumb, he'll call you on it. That Will was. And I say dumb stuff on this show all the time, so I was a little concerned about that. But yeah. So you agree with that? You are a goofball?
Kid at heart, but definitely very serious, I guess. So, and if you do say something dumb, I will call you out on it. That's not only me, but that's my friends. It's kind of the lifestyle that we live. So hopefully you say smart things.
I've never seen him more willing. Wait, were you going to make a golf joke?
Yeah, like hitting a 3-wood off the tee. Yeah. It's kind of dumb, isn't it?
Yeah, or hitting a driver into the water. That's also dumb.
Aha! True. That's what happened. Very true. I've never seen anybody more willing to sing openly on the air.
It was pretty impressive.
Proud Husky.
Very impressive.
Did you notice that he didn't join in?
Because of my singing voice.
He doesn't know the words.
And nobody wants to hear me sing.
I'll buy that.
He is Will Disley. Will, it's awesome to meet you. I've enjoyed cheering for you as a Husky season ticket holder, and look forward to watching you this season with the Seahawks.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Excited to be here.
He plays a position, Will Disley does, that is among the most uncertain. I think we know which three guys are going to be on the roster. I have no idea what the pecking order of the depth chart that's going to be, and that's tight end. Will Disley, a rookie drafted in the fourth round. Ed Dixon, a veteran who was signed from Baltimore in the offseason. No, I'm sorry, signed from Carolina, had previously played in Baltimore, who has yet to practice because of, it's a leg injury. At first it was a groin, now it sounds like it might be a strained quad. Who knows what exactly is going on there? And then Nick Vinette, who caught the only offensive touchdown for Seattle in the first preseason game. What have you seen from the tight ends, Dave?
Well, I think that they've challenged Vinette, because he's really stepping up. I mean, he's looked really good. And his routes, a couple in the games, the first catch that he had, the way he sat down in that zone and how precise he was. His feet were really good, and it just, I feel like last year he would have ran out there and just kind of turned around. But this time he's trying to drive guys off of a spot and then get to a sort of a dead part of the zone, and you know, and he's just kind of taken charge of that position. Like he needs to grab it and say, "This is mine," because you know, Will Dissly, he's going to push him. I think he's a really talented player. I think the blocking in the NFL is, that's the like shocking part for rookies, is how tough it is, how difficult it is to block in the NFL. So we'll see if he's able to get it. Right now, just from what we've seen so far, I would say that's a position that's taken an upgrade. It's gotten better. And look, I know Jimmy Graham, there's nobody like him, but as far as him blocking and being out there and doing what they want to do, I think this group looks really good. I'd really like to see Ed Dixon. It's a shame that he's hurt. And again, I'll just emphasize, I mean, coaches want to see a guy. I don't care how many years of film you have. I want to see you practice in our system. And it's a shame, because I really, looking at him last year, I thought he was the best blocking tight end in the NFL. But it's a good group there. And then maybe Tyrone Swoops works in. I mean, maybe for some reason they keep him. He's got some talent. He's probably more upside as a pass catcher and route runner than maybe the other guys. But I don't know about his blocking.
Well, Dixon's supposed to be the number one guy, but we haven't seen him. I don't know. It just seems like it continues, and who knows when he's going to be out there. But clearly, you could see what he could do there at Carolina when Greg Olsen was out. He had one game, 155 yards in receiving. But do you guys even care about the receiving part of it from the tight ends? I mean, I want them to be an option, but I just, every time I hear about, well, he's the best blocking guy in the draft, tight end, Will Dissly, and Ed Dixon, boy, he can block, and all these guys. Vinette, I think more of as a blocker than a receiver, but I know that there's an important part of that. You need him to be a pass catcher too, but I just love that they all want to block and are good at it.
That idea of the trade is the blocker becoming physical, that's probably the position that has changed the most in the offseason, where the Seahawks have gone from having Jimmy Graham, who was the best pass-catching tight end in franchise history, and Luke Wilson, whose best asset was his speed, to having three guys, certainly two of them, Dixon and Dissly, are better regarded for their blocking. Like on the sort of the spectrum of tight ends between being a great blocker and being a great receiver. If Graham was the best at receiving, both Dixon and Dissly are on that side of, hey, you know that they can acquit themselves well at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, that's what, when they got Dixon, I guess, and maybe this is kind of what you're saying, Danny, is that Dixon is a much better blocker than Jimmy Graham, than Jimmy Graham is a pass catcher, better pass catcher than Dixon. So I think the net on that, does that make sense? The net is that you're getting a better player for this offense. Look, Jimmy Graham's blocking, it was so bad. And really part of it was the way they used him. They should have just split him out. Just split him out and get it over with. They held on to the hope that he would be able to block. So, and it just never materialized.
By the end, I didn't blame Graham. And that might be the wrong thing. I looked at it kind of like...
I did. It was, they want you to block. Why can't you block? You used to be a rebounder there. Where was he? Florida, Miami, one of those.
You know what, though?
Has anyone missed him in training camp? Have you gone to training camp practices and thought, man, I wish they had Jimmy Graham back? Because I sit there and I go, and you know, Dave, like what you're talking about, the Seahawks offense would have been better last year if he was half the receiver and twice the blocker. And instead, and they're going to make up for it. They're going to score in the red zone without Jimmy Graham, because they're going to hand the ball to running backs who should be scoring in the red zone anyway.
Yeah, he had 10 touchdowns, and we're like, I think they're better off without him.
Well, they are.
But I do think they're better off without him. The weird thing about it, and this is, I felt that by the end, like, complaining about the way he blocked was like complaining about D. Gordon not walking. We're like, yeah, he doesn't walk. That's not part of his game. And like to complain about him not walking at this point, well, you
well, he needs to walk more, though.
No, he doesn't.
Yes, he does.
No, he doesn't. Because this is what it is. You got a product review, like when you're looking up and like, which grill do I buy? And they're like, this grill cooks very unevenly. It's exceptionally high temperature, but the temperatures are uneven. And then you get the grill and you're like, this thing won't cook at an even temperature. Like, yeah, that's what it said when you got it. Now you're complaining about the way it functions. Like, Jimmy Graham couldn't block. Don't have him block then. Have him do other stuff.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, though, come on, man. I mean, there's a lot of want to in blocking. And Jimmy Graham was just like, it was almost like he was being defiant. Like, oh, you want me to block here? See what you get. Tackle for a loss. He was miscast, no question about that. But that's probably, you're probably right. It's probably the biggest difference that you'll see in this offense. And I can't wait for it to happen. And, you know, it's funny, and the other day in the meeting, Pete actually brought up Zach Miller. And he said, this is kind of what we want. And that's kind of what we've been talking about on the show. Is like, remember Zach Miller? Man, he was awesome. I mean, that's what you want out of your tight end in this offense.
Yeah. If there was a little product guide to D. Gordon, it would be exceptionally fast, does not walk.
How'd you come up with the grill analogy anyway?
Well, because I was reading all the reviews and someone was complaining about the way the grill that I have functioned. And I was like, that's what was in the review. Like, yeah, you should be mad at yourself then.
You didn't read. Do you think Jimmy Graham should have came in and said, like, D. Gordon, I don't block.
I don't block so well. For tight ends who don't block so good. From Zoolander. It's Danny, Dave, and Moore. We're going to get you set for the start of the series in Oakland. We'll do that next.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore, streaming on every device on the 710 Seattle Sports app.
D. Gordon scratched. Going to have Andrew Romine playing second base instead tonight, bat ninth. Question of whether or not he's going to go on the DL. You got Robinson Cano coming back. Felix Hernandez available, perhaps. He was a batter away from coming into the game a couple times. He got a huge series here against the A's. And I feel immeasurably better about their chances going in. You kind of feel like they've spun it around. The Mariners have been able to turn that weight that they were carrying on their shoulders. And I don't know how it's going to turn out. But I certainly, after winning those four games in Houston, you feel the momentum behind them.
It was probably the best thing. Maybe the only thing that could turn you around from that Texas series, which was really disappointing. I'm so curious about Felix. And we've been this way all year, like speculating what's going to happen. Just his comments, and what did that mean? And like Shannon said, you know, they had warmed him up twice. Brad Adam told me the same thing. And, you know, I was like, wow, really? And I can't wait to see what's going to happen. But then his comments of saying, well, you know, I'm a starter, I'm going to be back there. I don't know, man. You use the word delusional, Jim. Maybe that's a little too harsh, but like, he lacks perception, it seems like what's going on right now. And that to me is, you know, I don't want to think ill of him. I don't want to assume the worst in him. I feel like, okay, he's going to come out of the bullpen and do the best he possibly can and not have any kind of attitude or anything like that. But I don't know, man. It's almost like what he says is the opposite of that.
I read his comments, and this is a charitable reading. I read it of saying, my struggles haven't changed how I see myself and what I'm capable of. Like that's what, when he said, I'm still a starter, that it's like.
But yet your last few outings say no.
Correct. But that would be the same as, hey, your last few outings have been terrible. And him saying, yeah, but I still think I'm capable of doing this job. I still think that I can be a starting pitcher.
I hope you're right, Danny.
I hope I'm right too. But the other side is that he's been put into a role where he's like, yeah, I'll do it, but I don't think I should be doing it. And that's
not very inspiring.
No, he can't take that attitude. And if he does, hey, if you get the results, he's at a point in his career, though, where I honestly, and I say this with, I don't care how he feels about it. Like, he can't refuse to accept the situation, and it's entirely results-based at this point. And if he's not good coming out of the bullpen, the next step is him not pitching at all for this team.
Do you think he was rooting for Erasmo yesterday?
Yeah, I do.
Do you?
Yeah.
Dave?
Yeah, I think so. I think most professionals aren't that petty. Okay. They don't get to where they are by not realizing that it's not about that guy doing poorly. It has nothing to do with the other guy. It has everything to do with me. So I would say no.
Because that's the guy who was taking his place.
Yeah, but right. Finding someone else short doesn't make you tall. Right?
Yeah.
No, I know.
Like,
I was just,
right. Someone else, there's nothing about Felix's performance in recent games that would lead him to believe or to say that, hey, well, I'm just as good as that guy. Like, he hasn't pitched up to snuff when it comes to being a starting pitcher. That's the blunt truth.
But the question you're asking, Jim, that's a natural human behavior sentiment. But I just think when you're a professional, there's no way you got there by thinking that way. you think much more. You hear players all the time go, yeah, you know, like Lofa Tatupu gets three interceptions in one game. We talked to him about it. He's like, yeah, I could have had a fourth one, man. You know, that's your attitude as a professional. So I would doubt that he would wish anybody ill will. I think he thinks he's frustrated.
The other thing that occurred to me, and this might be a dumb question too, but do you think that, because it still seems like Felix isn't quite on board with all of this, and for the bigger picture, do you think it'd be better if he just got lit up when he went out there as a reliever than if he did really well?
No, it wouldn't be better if he got lit up. Not for the Mariners. Every game counts at this point.
I know that, but I'm just saying for the greater good, for the long-term good. I honestly feel like he's going to be okay, because I think he's going to come out there. Because we've seen it in one-inning stretches, and we've also seen it in, you know, two- and three-inning, four-inning stretches. But I know we've seen the other side of it, too.
We've also seen him in the first inning.
We've seen the bad side. I know, but you know how I feel about that. Because when Felix comes in, it'll be the sixth or seventh inning, which isn't the first inning. It'll be his first inning, but there is a difference there, at least in my world. It's a crazy world, I know. But, no, I think he's going to be good as a reliever. I think it's going to be kind of fun to watch. But I was just wondering that if he's not totally on board with whatever Stottlemyre's telling him in service, that – it might be like, well, okay, if you need to be told one more time, then we're going to just have the A's just rip you to smithereens tonight.
If he has not gotten the point now, after he gave up 11 runs in six innings in the last outing he had in Texas, if that hasn't made it clear, I'm not sure what else possibly could make it clear to him that he needs to embrace a new approach, because the results that he's gotten have not been satisfactory. I think there's a chance he might feel that he's followed the advice too much and gotten away from who he is. I think that would be more likely than a failure to understand what has happened to him so far.
He needs to be on board. You know why? It's all hands on deck. All hands on deck. How does that siren go?
No, I don't
all
think that's
hands
it.
On
Try
deck.
Another one.
How about ringing the bell? Ding, 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 ding.
No, nope, no, nope, that's definitely
like
not it.
Like the hot show in Anchorman?
Yeah. Ooh, that's closer.
Oh, yeah, like
that's
the
closer.
Horn. Yeah, he blows.
Hey,
all hands on deck.
Maybe try a trumpet, Dave. Let me hear how a trumpet would sound.
All right.
Danny,
sounds like taps.
We're going to find
Danny,
out what,
go to break.
What else we're going to find out we learn next.
All hands on deck.
The biggest series of the season.
The Mariners are very much alive in the race.
Mariners, A's. Game 1 tonight at 7.
It takes everybody. It takes all 25. Everybody's ready to chip in.
This out to left field. This is a no-doubter.
The playoffs are on the line.
This team is unbelievable. There's so much fight.
Catch every pitch on the home of the Mariners.
Swing and a miss, strike three. Sugar with a save.
How sweet it is.
710 ESPN Seattle. The voice of Seattle sports.
The Midsummer Classic. Well, that was a month ago, wasn't it? No. That's every day in the afternoon at BW's, which is Buffalo Wild Wings. And your afternoons could use a little spicing up with happy hour. Grab your friends, visit your nearest B-dubs to score $4 shareables like street tacos, fried pickles, chili queso dip, mozzarella sticks, and roasted garlic mushrooms. Select domestic draft beers, they start at $4.25. There's also deals on select liquor and house cocktails, too. Happy hour, B-dubs. I don't know about you, but it's sounding pretty good right about now. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
It is time to find out what we've learned. It's brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. We learned about Groundhog Day down at Oakland. Shannon Dreyer just tweeted out a video of it, as requested by one Jim Moore. You guys are getting along again. It's so good to hear.
Yeah, we're on good terms. I was just wondering about Wade LeBlanc last week and why he was pulled, and that's how I got blocked on Twitter.
Well, you know, that's the last in a long line of straws that had been broken.
A bucket can only hold so many drops of water.
What would you know about that, Jess?
Oh, nothing, Jim. You've always been so pleasant with me.
I really like the way she put that. Why'd you block me? Because I had had enough.
I'm full.
Earlier today, we also learned a little bit about sounding the horn.
What's the sound on board for all hands on deck? Chuck Knox used to do that all the time. All hands on deck. Need all hands on deck.
Can I get the horn one more time?
I'd like to hear the horn.
Okay, thank you.
Something like that. I don't even know if that's a call for all.
It was kind of a deflated trumpet.
All hands on deck.
That's like the guy at the Mariner game in Peoria, though.
Oh. Come on, don't we have some Navy guys out there somewhere that can text in? 710-710, what's the...
Is it more like an air horn?
What's the call for all hands on deck? You've heard it in a movie, right?
I'm unfamiliar. I don't... No? I can never... I remember Taps. I remember the Reveille. Those are all Army things, though, right? I'm unfamiliar with the code for all hands on deck.
I know what Dave's referring to, but I can't think of it
Chuck
either.
Used to make, like, some kind of a noise, too, or it was something like that, and it was always really funny. But he's like, hey, now, boys, all hands on deck. And then he would, like, simulate it. And I can't remember what it was. Text it in, 710-710.
And that was a sign that you needed all available
bodies. And we all got to give it our all. No 10-day DL for D. Gordon, Danny, to take care of his little toe.
Just can't have it. Saying that a little bit of rest right now might pay huge dividends in the final month of the season.
We also had James Paxton on earlier in the show, and we learned way too much about cribbage.
You know what I learned from a guy in college is that you never have the opponent cut the deck. Are you on that?
Oh, it's a gentleman's game.
It's a gentleman's game, right. So you get a peg for that, right?
Right, yeah. That's kind of the trick is when you're playing someone new, you offer them to cut the deck, and it's kind of a trick.
Right, and I think that they get to take the deal then.
Yep.
Yeah, yep. There you go. Finer points of cribbage, Danny.
Yeah, seriously, this could be a whole podcast. Yeah. Dave, cribbage, Jim, and James you know what cribbage.
You know what I would call it? Peg. That was a courtesy laugh there by James. No, what a nice guy.
No, I thought that was funny. No, cribbage is cool, too, because like when you're cutting for deal, it's the low card gets the deal.
That's right.
How many games of cards where the low card wins?
How about if you cut a jack? When you turn over the grip card, you get two for that.
Yeah. Is another one, Danny.
This is foreign language to me.
Wow. Is that his knobs or his nibs? There's one of those things.
Hey.
Yeah.
There's also muggins, is that right? When you steal somebody else's points, Jim?
Isn't that like a Harry Potter
Oh, stealing
reference?
Points, yeah.
What's that called?
Muggins is when somebody doesn't count the points correctly in their hand and you get to take their points because they didn't count it. I have no idea.
I believe so.
It's going to really? Say.
Yeah. Well, because cribbage is so complicated.
But what do, Dave? Do you, if someone misses their points,
you fall asleep?
Do you tell them that they missed the point? If it's a friendly game, do you tell them, or do you just say, "Well, you missed those points," and you don't say?
Well, actually, the real rules are you take the points, you take them.
Mm-hmm.
But with my wife, for example, I was teaching her how to play, so I'm like, "Okay, you missed this," and then I'd let her have it, and then she beat me 18 times in a row, and I stopped doing that.
It's a gentleman's game. Yeah. Everybody sits there. Oh, man.
It's also a Navy game.
Is it?
I think so.
It is a Navy game.
Yeah. How cool were those old fighters flying over today?
It was pretty fantastic.
I think Jordan Babineau was up there in one of them.
In one of those?
Yeah.
Would you fly in one if given the opportunity?
I love those planes so much, but I don't know if the claustrophobia thing would kick in. Probably.
So it was P-51 Mustang.
Yeah.
Spitfire.
They had a Spitfire British plane, a British Mosquito. They had a B-25 Mitchell. There was a P-47 Thunderbolt. And I think that was it.
No Corsair. Corsairs, I remember. Those were in the Pacific Theater.
Yeah, and they had the Gull Wing.
They were featured in Black Sheep Squadron, I believe.
That's right. Pappy Boeington.
I loved that show.
Yeah. Loved that. You know, so that's from Mr. Allen's museum, where all the things in the museum work. Like the tank that they had out there. Had two Cadillac engines in it, the guy told me.
Now that you're doing color for the radio broadcast, are you obligated to call him Mr. Allen?
Oh, you know what? No, that just came out. I guess I call him that because he owns a museum.
Yeah.
And all the stuff there works.
Mr. Allen has decided that all the stuff will work. No,
PA?
Mr. Allen's fine. PA. What up, PA? I want to say thanks to James Paxton for joining us. Will Disley, John Clayton. Jessamyn McIntyre is the producer that keeps everything running, and Curtis Rogers is on the board. Fantastic today. We really appreciated all of you listening. Let's go, M's. Let's go get this first one in Oakland and make tomorrow Robinson Cano's return that much more interesting. We'll talk to you at 3 on Danny, Dave, and More.